The Vietnam War, it's over. Your job's just begun.
A new HBO original limited series.
Welcome to the world of spycraft. Strap in.
From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr.
What are you concealing?
Based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel by Viet Thanh Nguyen.
What if I told you that I was a communist spy?
How did you become this?
The Sympathizer, streaming April 14th on Max. Subscription required.
Hey everybody, what's going on? Josh Wigler here on Post Show Recaps with a brand new show that we are recapping each and every week for the next several weeks. It's HBO's Lovecraft Country. We are headed to Lovecraft Country on Post Show Recaps, and I am certainly not alone on this road trip into what is going to be a pretty harrowing journey, I think, and hopefully probably a harrowing at times podcast experience, both from like the podcasting perspective and the listening perspective, but hopefully some laughs and good cheer along the way as well. I know that I am certainly joined here by two people that I'm really, really excited about going on this adventure with, one of whom you know if you are a listener of the Everything is Super podcast here, the Marvel Cinematic Universe rewatch that we are doing here on Post Show Recaps. He is a person who I have often described as the best worst person that I know. It is Kevin Mahadeo. Kevin, how are you, my friend?
Hello, Josh. How you doing? I'm doing all right. I do believe, though, Josh, this is the last time you get to speak as the one white person on the podcast.
As the one white person.
Yeah, you're done after these intros.
I'm going to do introductions and then I'm not going to talk. It's going to be very strange. I'm not going to say a word. I'll be here, but I'm not going to say anything.
No. Yeah. You can talk. It's okay.
I'll only talk if you give me permission. So you tell me what to do and I will do it. I am so excited to introduce the third talking head on this panel. We've got three hosts here for Lovecraft Country. The breakout star, as far as I'm concerned, of the RHAP class of 2020. One of my favorite new people that I've met in a good long while, and really excited to get her on a podcast. The first time we ever spoke, she said Strigoi. So you know, if you're a post-show recaps listener from back in the day, she's legit. LaTanya Starks, making your podcast debut, let alone your post-show recaps debut, LaTanya.
Hi, Josh. Hi, Kevin. Hello, everybody. Yes, this is my podcast debut, my post-show recaps debut. It's
very
How are you feeling? Exciting.
You okay? Is it going to be all right? I think we're going to be okay here.
I think we're going to be okay.
I think we're going to
do
this. Great. We're going to be great. We're going to be great. We're talking Lovecraft Country, coming to HBO August 16th. It's coming your way from Misha Green, who is the executive producer and showrunner formerly of Underground, also executive produced by Jordan Peele, J.J. Abrams. It is starring Jonathan Majors, Journey Smollett, Courtney B. Vance, Michael K. Williams, a real who's who, like just like a powerhouse list of talent that is attached to this project. Based on a book of the same name by Matt Ruff is the author of the novel. And it is a road trip in the 1950s through Jim Crow America and the collision of racial injustice and conventions of the horror genre. And it is going to be a lot. I think it is going to be a lot in terms of the content on the show. We are going to be really getting into it here on the podcast. So I think it's really important to get that up front. Things are going to get intense. So if it's too intense for you, we live in a very intense time right now. All good. We want to just make sure that you know that that is the podcast that you're getting into here on Post-Show Recaps. So yeah, that's the show. It's coming out August 16th. We're going to be here every single week. We are going to be talking about each and every episode of the show. We've got an email address for you to send your feedback into, lovecraft@postshowrecaps.com. It's going to slide straight into, you're even going to bypass the DMs. You're going straight into our inboxes is what you're going to do with that lovecraft@postshowrecaps.com. But in case people want to slide into your mentions, Kevin, I know you are at Kev Mahadeo. LaTanya, you got the Twitters?
Yeah, I'm on Twitter at LK Starks.
Okay.
Yeah. LK Starks. Okay. Sometimes I'm
forget. Multiple Tonys.
Yes, multiple like Tonys. Many Tonys. I forget sometimes my own Twitter handle because while I use it, I don't often look at my profile. So
that's about to change. It's going to change for you.
I definitely feel that, though, right? Like when people are just like, what's your number? You have to think for a moment. We're like, what is my
right
number? Because you never dial it. There's no,
you have to think for your own phone number, Kevin.
Sometimes, yeah. Sometimes. Because I'm never calling myself. I definitely, if someone asked me someone else's phone number, just forget it. Like at this point now.
Do you not have a single phone number memorized?
I think my sister's and maybe my mom's. Oh, I know Robin's because I use her to punch in grocery discount cards and everything. Robin being.
And not because she's your life partner. It's
yeah, just, no, it's just the groceries.
Just a discount just card. That's it.
Yeah, priorities. Yeah. Got your priorities. Latanya, do you have phone numbers memorized or are they archaic at this point?
I have a few memorized because I did grow up in an era before cell phones. So I had to have numbers memorized and some of those have stuck with me, but like in the cell phone era, I think that the only ones I have memorized are my sister's and then my best friend's, because she's had the same phone number since we were in college. So
let me give some advice to all of us here on the podcast is whatever we do, do not give your number on the air, because people won't have to memorize it. They'll just have to hit the 15 seconds back button, and then they'll have our number and they'll call us, and it's not going to be.
Can
pretty.
We give them
pretty.
Your number?
No.
Oh. Yeah, we're just going to
okay.
give out.
I would if I knew it. Please don't.
All right. Fine.
Please don't.
Fine. I guess.
Some measure of privacy would be fantastic. But no, we want to hear from you people, not by our cell phones, because that would be so creepy. Because like we're definitely not giving out our number. So like, how did you get that? Lovecraft@postshowrecaps.com. We'll also have a specific show, specific feed coming out at some point in the next little while. You'll be able to find us on your podcatcher of choice. But you can also just find Post Show Recaps wherever you get your podcasts. We'll be in that main feed. So that's the setup. That's the setup for what we're doing here. And today we're just doing a preview show. We're recording this on a Thursday night, August 13th. So just like a little bit of time, a couple days before Lovecraft debuts. And I think, you know, certainly for me, if you don't know who I am, if you're just wandering into this because you're looking for a Lovecraft Country podcast and you're not a Post Show Recaps regular, hi, I'm Josh. I do most of the podcasts here on Post Show Recaps. I also work for The Hollywood Reporter. I'm an entertainment writer over there. I'm doing some editing on our coverage of Lovecraft Country for THR. The great Richard Newby is going to be our beat reporter on that front and has already some really great stuff that is in the works coming out as soon as Friday, August 14th. So keep an eye out for that. But if you are in like my space at the very least, I feel like if you like pay attention to like
the,
media,
the social media,
yeah, if you're mm-hmm. yeah, still on MySpace.
Remember Tom? You can hit us up on MySpace too, I think. Should we set up the Lovecraft Country MySpace account?
I would love that so much. Oh my God.
Kevin, nothing's stopping you.
As an entertainment marketing person, I would actually suggest we do TikTok and not MySpace, but you know, if we want that retro feel.
I will not do TikTok. You are not allowed to see my body lower than the shoulders right now with a camera angle that is kind to the shape of my face. But in like the entertainment news space, I feel like you're starting to see a lot of popping up for Lovecraft Country for a ton of reasons, not the least of which is that, hey, COVID-19, you ever heard of it? We live in a time where new content is lean, and to have like a big genre HBO show, that would probably be exciting any day of the week. But I know that this is one of the first new show podcasts we've been doing on Post Show Recaps in forever. So I'm really excited to do it. I'm really hopeful that, that other people are excited that we are doing it and are going to be along for the ride. And Kevin and Latanya, I'm very pumped to be doing this with both of you. Latanya, I'd love to turn the tables to you because this is your podcast debut and I want the people to get to know you, to know what you're all about. Who are you? What are you all about?
Who are you,
Latanya Starks?
Who am I? Well, Latanya K. Starks. I remember that I am born. No, I'm kidding. So I'm actually a member of RHAP's class of 2020, which is very exciting. I don't know if you would describe it more as a job interview or like a contest or a combination of both. But I feel incredibly fortunate to have won.
We were indoctrinating you into a cult.
Oh,
is okay. Is what this was.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it would not be the first time.
Our wombats.
Yeah. We met a ton of great people through that process who have been featured across the network doing like Big Brother coverage, a lot of reality show coverage. But LaTanya, we met you and I met at the very end of one of the nights of the interviews, and literally, like, I forget exactly what it was you said, but you had like you were talking about something that was actively bad. Like there's something that was bad, and you like said like Josh, does that get a Strigoi? Which is
yes,
very old school post show recaps.
That whole interview process was really cool, but it was all quite a blur. I only learned that you all were having that contest, you know, like for entries the day that the entries were due.
Yeah.
And which was also coincidentally the same day that I was starting virtual debate camp, because in my normal life, I guess, I'm a debate coach at Northwestern University. But we have a debate institute each summer where we, typically welcome, high school students to campus. But this summer, obviously, because of COVID, everything was virtual. So Lovecraft Country, honestly, was the show that was like getting me through the 7 weeks of virtual debate camp that was going to happen. The idea that I get to podcast about it right now is I'm just super pumped for. So yeah, that was the interview process was bananas, for me, because I listened to so many podcasts from, RHAP all the time. And I prepared for it like a mad woman, as I tend to do when I'm nervous. So my interview question was supposed to be about Survivor. I had not seen Survivor since the first season because I'm kind of notorious for not watching a lot of reality television. I have like a soft spot in my heart for Top Chef, and Top Chef was very much like sports to me in the time that it was airing. So that's what my initial application was about. But when we had to do the interview, we had to talk about something else, and my topic was Survivor. So instead of, you know, being a normal human and just admitting that I didn't know anything about it, I decided to binge watch the whole like last season of the show.
Yeah, you so started I could come in with Winners at War, is that right?
Yes.
Yeah, that's incredible.
Yeah.
with some hot takes on things. And I think at that point we were talking about just the sheer number of cops that were in the All-Star
so
season.
So many cops. Yeah, lots of
there
cops.
There are so many cops, and yeah, it was a lot. So I Strigoi'd the police.
You Strigoi'd the police. That's what you did. I Strigoi'd the police. Put it on a shirt.
Accept it so hard. Accept that. Yes.
Yeah. It was really, really fun. And it was just like immediate to me, like, all right. So it's just like, it's a matter of when we're going to do something. It's not if. And I was so happy that you wanted to do this. You said that the last like 7 weeks or so, Lovecraft was getting you through. What was it about like the prospects and the promise of this show? Was it like the talent involved? What was it about Lovecraft that was, exciting to you? Cause I know that you're not a big reality TV person, but you're, an avid consumer of scripted content, whether it's TV or movies. This is like a true passion of yours.
Too much, of an avid consumer at times of TV and movies. It's very nice, that I get to do this podcast for many reasons, but one of the big reasons is that it's validating for my family. So I can now be like, it's okay that I spent all of the time that I have both in my youth and now, escaping from the world and not into a book necessarily, but into TV. So with this show, even before, we saw like any of the commercials for it, like the previews ahead of other HBO shows that I was watching, I saw somewhere that Misha Green was doing a project with HBO, and I was just like, okay, well, this is going to be great. And whatever it is, I'm going to watch it. I don't know what it is yet. As we started to get more and more information about the cast, and then we finally got the rollout of that first, preview, and I'm not sure which HBO show that would have been aired.
Probably
that would have aired during
probably Westworld, right?
Yeah, I think it probably started around Westworld and picked up a lot during the like Mark Ruffalo series that was airing.
I heard that was very depressing.
Yeah, I couldn't watch. I couldn't finish it because it was just during a time of just like abjection.
Yeah. That was not the time for depression.
It was not the time. But you know, I saw the preview and like it was the it was a combination of things. You know, HBO has had a great track record recently of just like really promoting more diverse voices. Thinking of people like Issa Rae and Michaela Cole and obviously Regina King with everything that she's done, both on The Leftovers and Watchmen being almost a flawless show. You know, they've really just been putting forth a lot of Black stories, which is fantastic, especially for a network like HBO. So the pedigree of HBO, the name Misha Green, and then seeing the cast, the show looks beautiful. And I love horror. Like, I love being scared. I'm not super familiar with H.P. Lovecraft for reasons that I'll get into a little bit later. But obviously, Lovecraft's influences are everywhere in horror.
It's got tentacles and coming out of its weird monster mouth.
I like to call it Cthulhu Core.
Yeah.
but yeah, it's everywhere. So it was that. It was the... And then the visuals combined with the music, which is what I think about when I think of Misha Green. Just like, you know, in Underground, which was a great series that got canceled despite, you know, it being critically acclaimed. Like
she was the musical, co-creator of it, right?
Yeah, she was a co-creator of that. But like, you know, she kind of combined sensibilities of coming from like a writing for shows like Heroes, for example, and then brings these very modern sensibilities and like superhero aesthetics and tropes almost and updates them for like a modern audience in a period piece that typically has to do with Blackness or white supremacy and Black people being heroes in the face of white supremacy. So, you know, there's just a lot about this show that, you know, I think is going to end up being a rich text is probably the best way to put it. And that's why I was really looking forward to it.
Kevin, who are you? Kevin, people who, how did you get on this call? Kevin, one of my great longtime friends and now longtime podcast partner. But there's the chance that people don't know who you are because they don't listen to superhero stuff. So give us the spiel on who you are, what you're all about, and what it is about Lovecraft that you're both excited to watch and also like to have this as kind of a venue to talk about a lot of the stuff that you're interested in.
Oh my God, there's so much there, Josh. There's so much. As for who I am, I mean, I am a man of no import. That's a lie. I think I'm very important. I'm super self-important. But Josh and I go way back from the days of Wizard Magazine. We worked together. I was a senior staff writer, but these days I'm in entertainment marketing. I still do writing. I'm actually a published comic book writer. Pop my
collar a little bit.
Very fancy. Hoping to do more. So if you're listening to this, give me them work. but yeah, I'm a avid pop culture junkie. I love comics, TV, movies, video games, just pretty much anything pop culture I love consuming and learning about and talking about. I think that it's interesting though, because like podcasting, I think if my family heard I was podcasting, they would probably have the opposite reaction. It would give them more reason to be mad at me about my choices. Just be like, am I going to hear my dad saying just like, who wants to hear you talk? Who wants to hear what you have to say? What are you doing running your mouth? Like, just, I could see it. I could hear it. But anyway, I love horror is a big thing of the reasons why I'm really excited about this. But more than that, too, the show itself is definitely the horror aspect and the pedigree aspect. I'm not familiar with Misha Green because I didn't see Underground, but I love Jordan Peele to the point where I think Jordan Peele right now, along with N.K. Jemisin, has really, really influenced me as a wannabe writer and creator to in a way that I have not been in a long time. After seeing Get Out specifically, and then recently, I think about a year ago, reading the Broken Earth trilogy from N.K.
Sitting on my shelf, it's on deck for my reading material.
So great. It just changed my perspective on what can be done with stories, and especially what can be done with stories and telling our stories, basically. People of color stories, and especially, you know, Black people of color. It was just such a change of pace to see the usage of tropes that we see exist continuously and have it turn on its head and use as a way to present a story about race that really felt real and personal. And really, really said something. That changed a lot of what I saw potential in, and a lot of the stuff I do now, I'm really trying to harness and influence, harness that influence and kind of do it. So those are big reasons why I'm interested in the show. And even honestly, you know, just to geek out about Jordan Peele some more, even beyond Get Out and Us, I loved him from Key and Peele. Him and Keegan are incredible. They're comedic geniuses to me. Their show was one of the funniest things I had seen. It, I don't know how to describe it. The thing that I love about that show is that it hits so many truisms, as I keep calling them, about being a person of color sometimes, like little things that you don't really immediately pick up on, but just like you can look at another person of color and you like just nod along. It's almost like in media, you see so many times they'll make stuff specifically for white audiences where white audiences will get it. And if they ever do something that is specifically for a person of color, they would stop down and explain it almost to the white audience. They never do that with the white part, right? Only with the person of color. And Key and Peele flipped that. They would just do things and they wouldn't stop down to explain it to, you know, other people why this makes sense and why it's funny. But the people who get it absolutely got it. So, yeah, just geeking out about them for a while. That also, sorry to bother you, sorry, is another one that I have a huge influence for. But as for this podcast, if you haven't figured it out yet, and if you haven't ever heard me on Everything is Super, I really enjoy talking about race in this country and how it's presented in media, the type of ways that we can use it in storytelling, the type of ways it is used in storytelling. It's something that I'm looking forward to kind of like being able to talk about in a way that I haven't gotten to a lot. I just feel like this is definitely a forum that allows for that. And I'm really excited about that because I've got feelings about a lot of it. So yeah, that's a kind of a lot of jumbly throwing out their reasons, but also, of course, Josh, to talk to you and LaTanya about this. Oh, that's the other reason. I'm so excited to do that.
You're so sweet. Just so absolutely, like, I'm just, you really put it on at the end. I always appreciate that, Kevin. No, I think that this is a show that absolutely, I think invites is not a strong enough word. These conversations. This show is about these conversations. This show is about racism. This is a show that is called Lovecraft Country that's pulling its name. I guess it's pulling its name from a book, and the book was pulling the name Lovecraft from the surname of a legendary horror writer, H.P. Lovecraft, who is, you know, one of the sort of premier names that are spoken of when it comes to like monster horror, and like you said, LaTanya, Cthulhu, I don't even know how you're supposed to pronounce it. The guy with the octopus mouth, the dragon wings, and all the scary stuff, and a lot of the Guillermo del Toro creature influence comes from Lovecraft. And you really can feel Lovecraft's influence across the horror genre. But yo, that guy was very racist! was like fantastically, prolifically racist, and this is something that I never knew, because I'm not an H.P. Lovecraft person at all. Like I'm not a huge horror person the way that you both are really into horror. I just saw The Thing for the first time a couple weeks ago.
How'd that go for you?
Josh, that
scared the shit out of me. LaTanya, that's how it went. It was terrifying.
That makes me very happy. I love that. That's I think one of the best horror movies. Also something that I feel like you can see the influence of H.P. Lovecraft
very much
part of
it. Yeah, like a lot of like the monsters with like limbs like coming out of faces and stuff.
Yeah. A lot of like weird cosmic alien body horror in that movie.
So this story that is about racism that takes place in like deeply, nakedly racist parts of America in the 1950s.
Which has no relevance to how it is now.
Nothing.
Absolutely none, because we fixed racism.
You did?
So that's not an issue anymore. Oh. Yeah, the white people,
Josh,
we did it.
Josh
we
specifically
did it.
Too.
We got it. We nailed it. It's taking inspiration, or it's in conversation, or it is like it's butting right up against the creative works of somebody who was so racist, I think is a really fascinating prospect. And so I think, like, when I say, like, this show invites these kinds of conversations that you've been eager to have on podcasts, Kevin, it's like, that's what the show is about. You couldn't podcast about the show unless you were having those conversations.
I mean, you could.
I mean, you might be able to.
And I'm sure some people will. Right. But not in this house, you know?
Yeah.
Not in this house.
In this house, we talk about racism.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think that's happening.
Yeah. You know, it's funny, Latanya, I'm curious to talk to you about this stuff, too, because, like, you know, we both just mentioned we're huge into horror, and I do love horror. Specifically horror movies. I've gotten into books a lot recently, too, horror novels. But Lovecraft, as far as, like, reading his works, I had never actually done myself. Like, I was very familiar with the themes and the stuff around it. I didn't know about the racism for a long time because I never read it directly, so... You know, now that I know, like, he wrote a lot of these characters to be really, really stereotypical, you know, was a new point for me. I mean, honestly, I didn't even know or think about the fact that Rudyard Kipling was racist. But then now as an adult, it's like, whoa, yeah, of course Man was racist. So I never read his stuff, but I'm super familiar with it. I'm super familiar with the Cthulhu stuff. And I love the idea of cosmic horror. I love the idea of that almost like insignificance of people and humanity to greater beings. I think as a theme is interesting. Not specifically, obviously, on racial lines, just as humanity. I always get a kick out of like, we're not as important as we think we are, because I feel like humanity needs to be taken out a peg on a regular basis. And so like that stuff interested me, but I never really delved into Lovecraft. Works himself, and I'm curious if you have either, if you've ever read anything.
So no, and one of the reasons actually was because of the racism. You know, I know that there are plenty of people who are able to separate art from artist, and there are some times when that I think is like better. There's better times for that than others. For me growing up, my aunt who actually passed away from cancer in 2017, she's the reason I love horror. She introduced me to it at a very young age, and she'd read Lovecraft and was like, you don't need this. Like, we'll do some other things. But yeah, I mean, one of the cool things that I read, in the Wrap, I think it was, they did like a small piece on Misha Green and kind of like the horrors of the racist, you know, reality of Lovecraft. And first of all, my first comment is I always find it incredibly amusing when people, are like shocked that old white dudes are racist. It just seems so, especially people who are people of means. I mean, those types of things, like racism and classism, just go together so well. And any author that whose works that we're talking about now, you know, probably had some notoriety or came from privilege and were able to like take up writing as a career in the first place. So not at all surprised that he was racist, ended up like not reading a bunch of his stuff as a result of that. But I will say, you know, I love a lot of the horror that Lovecraft influenced. And Misha Green kind of looked at it in terms of just saying, you know, I ended up reading Lovecraft to get ready for doing this show. I didn't find it as life-changing as, you know, so many people around me told me they found it. But I understood, like, the foundationalism, you know, as a series of texts that, you know, like the Cthulhu mythos lends to lots of other works in the genre. What I want to do, Misha said, is more of like a reappropriation of what H.P. Lovecraft put out there, because of his otherization and like white supremacy being so front and center. I mean, it is kind of common pop culture knowledge at this point that, you know, when Lovecraft wrote about racism, sexism, xenophobia, homophobia, like those were the monsters he was kind of constructing. That was the otherism that he was putting out there. An article that I read that I thought was really good was this 2017 article by Wes House that's on LitHub that's called We Can't Ignore H.P. Lovecraft's White Supremacy, wherein House explains, making no efforts to conceal his bigoted theories, Lovecraft took to pen and publication with the most grotesque appraisals of those he deemed inferior. His letters overflow with anti-Semitic conspiracy theories. Then he goes on to say, sympathies with rising fascism were equally apparent. Apparently, Lovecraft was quite into Hitler. And then goes on to say that his contempt for blacks ran even deeper. He had a 1912 poem entitled On the Creation of Niggers. And he even had a cat named Nigger Man, because in his mind, he just thought that, like, having just designed man and beast, then God decided to create black people as, like, in between that space of man and beast. So, yeah, I mean, like, I can acknowledge the obvious blatant, like, just want, those are just a couple examples of the obvious blatant racism that comes from this person. But obviously his works have influenced countless people. They've been remixed a little bit with this book, which I am going to read for sure.
The one the show is based on.
Yeah, the Lovecraft Country book that the show is based upon, which I have. It's in front of me and it's going to be read.
You're willing that into existence?
Yeah.
You're
just, I'm willing.
You say it, it'll happen.
You know, I see Watership Down on my shelf right now. And it's just been waiting for me for, I don't know.
It's interesting because, oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, you know, even with this book, from what I've read so far, like, people have been able to, you know, find influence and, like, see the author behind kind of the works that are near and dear to their heart. But at the same time, you know, reappropriate that kind of horror and make it more existential horror. The type of stuff that I love so much about Get Out, for example, is that, you know, Jordan Peele was influenced by the works of Lovecraft, but his monsters were people, and, you know, use existential horror as kind of a way to make the existential dread felt by black people on a day-to-day basis, just as we move through life, more accessible for everyone. And so I think that, you know, the combination of Jordan Peele's, like, producing credit here, with Misha Green's ability to, like, modernize traditional stories, have stunning visuals and unexpected, like, modern needle drops, in order to, like, and using this as a way to showcase and examine how black people have had to, like, write their way around traditional horror narratives that were initially popularized by cis white, like, privileged males. So yeah, I'm super into the idea behind the show, the influences that the author has had on other creators. And I'm, like, really interested to see what a black woman as a showrunner does with, you know, source material that comes from someone who was just, it seems like, the worst kind of person.
Yeah.
Yeah. I, in a similar way, I just actually started reading, the Ballad of Black Tom, which is by a short story by Victor Lavelle, who is basically a retelling of a Lovecraft story, but from the POV of the black character, Victor Lavelle being a black writer. And I'm really, really enjoying it. And it's a similar way, right? Like taking something and almost like reappropriating the story and the themes and literally the story itself, to tell it in a new way, in a different light, and to imbue actual themes that feel relevant to that character's race into this. And so I've been really enjoying it. It's pretty, it's a short story, so it's not super long. But like he also, wrote The Changeling, which I bought, a couple weeks ago. My girlfriend or fiance, had already read it and she loves it. So I bought it just one to, you know, give money to the author and two, to read it myself. So I'm really excited about that. And your mention too of Get Out, like I mentioned how much, you know, Jordan Peele influenced me and especially that movie. Like, yeah, I could like do a dissertation on that movie and how well it handled imbuing the audience with the anxieties and feelings of people of color, and especially Black people of color, as they experience not just what's me interesting to me, like a contrast, right, is that this movie, the show Lovecraft Country, is taking place in a specific time period in a specific area of America, whereas Get Out wasn't about these types of racist, quote unquote. Get Out was very much about the almost racism that exists in liberal white people. And I thought that was so smart to handle it that way, to not just be your typical scary Southern racist, that these were, you know, educated, middle-class white people, and showing the real racism that lives there and that can exist there. Especially, for me being in an interracial relationship, I really identified with a lot of lines of dialogue and things like that, you know, having experienced similar stuff in various parts of the country amongst liberal people. So I love that. But to me, the moment that I feel like really solidifies what you're saying, and I actually tweeted about this and Jordan liked it, so another
day,
is that I think the most powerful moment in that movie, and probably one of my favorite moments in a horror film, full stop, is the ending, is near the ending. Mm-hmm. He did such a good job making everyone feel anxiety that you are in the audience. And the moment those flashing lights show up,
yeah,
everyone in the audience is filled with dread, is filled with this horror. And it's because he knew what you would feel. But the moment you felt that, what's interesting is the moment the audience felt it, right? You're feeling so scared for the character, but that fear and that dread you feel is the real fear that exists every time a person of color sees those lights. And he managed to make everyone there feel it. And I think that was the power in what he did, is that for a brief moment, the audience truly understood, even though they didn't know what they were experiencing, the real fear that exists when those flashing lights happen, especially now in the relevance of today. But really, it's been relevant for people of color forever, but now it's a little more evident to everyone else. And that I think was just so cleverly well done. And that's the type of stuff I'm honestly really excited about for something like this, is seeing those types of things. That's kind of what I meant, where it's just like, there's moments like that you're never going to get when other people tell these stories, when, you know, white people tell stories about people of color. These are the moments you don't get, because you're still getting everything from this like white POV almost. Being able to see these stories, like how Victor Lavelle is doing with Ballad of Black Tom, what Lovecraft Country is trying to do, is showing people of color stories from the perspective, writing, directing of people of color. It's one of the reasons I also think Black Panther was such a huge success, in my opinion, which is another podcast we'll get to in a few weeks with Josh and I.
Oh, right. But, yeah, that's coming up.
Yeah. And so I, you know, for me, that's the type of stuff that I really like. This, you know, it is a bit of the reappropriation for sure. And I just like the idea of taking that POV that was so different and so not, you know, our perspective, and like kind of actually being able to finally tell it and being able as an audience member to see it. That was, again, long and rambly, but like just the type of excitement and passion that I have about this, it's just, we don't get it. Like, we never get this type of stuff, I guess, you know? Like, and so when we do.
Yeah, with this cast and the creators behind it, like, we definitely don't get things like this, and we need way more of them. I mean, just like looking at some of the things that the cast has said, you know, like Journey Smollett, in her Hollywood Reporter interview with Lacey Rose, you know, talked a lot about why she kind of gets annoyed, essentially, when people say that this is the show's about something timely. When, you know, like, you know, you just said, Kevin, for us, it's been timely, like, forever. Mm-hmm. It's just what life is. We deal with injustice and inhumane treatment all of the time. At the hands of white people, we deal with white supremacy all of the time. And it's, you know, it's unfortunate is, I guess, the best euphemism I can use, that it took several black lives being snuffed out like candles on film and then circulated for everyone's almost entertainment value, for people to realize why black people are so afraid and traumatized and upset and are out there protesting in the first place. You know, during the Comic-Con virtual like panel, there were stories from like everyone, in all of the black people in the cast have some type of story where they're talking about interacting with the police and how terrifying it is. Like Courtney B. Vance talked about being nearly arrested for like stepping outside of his own home years ago at night and being surrounded by 7 cops. And someone like black who was a cop recognized who he was. And he was just like, I live here. My twins are, they were like young, so this was years ago, are asleep, you know, et cetera. And it's hard for, like, that's an experience, obviously, he still lives with to this day. Michael Kenneth Williams talked about going to eat with some friends, and a white woman left her phone, or thought she left her phone at the establishment. But when she saw that Michael Kenneth Williams and his friends were there eating, she was so afraid to just come in and ask about the phone, she called the police. You know, it's just incessant. It's something that's dealt with, that we deal with all of the time. It's going to be, I'm really excited to see how the monsters, you know, are used in comparison to, you know, what the actual people in the show are doing and whatever nefarious, you know, like, you know, back room deals and that they have going on. That led to kind of like the call to adventure for this whole group in the first place. So, yeah, I'm very excited that this is happening now. If people want to think about it as timely, I guess, you know, that's up to them. If it means that we get one more exposure to, you know, what it was actually like for our like ancestors who are still alive in many cases, to have dealt with this type of violence and oppression, to the fact where, you know, it's still very much present today. If it takes a show like Watchmen, or it takes a show like Lovecraft Country to really, one, start making people realize and be aware, and two, you know, make people in positions of power understand that more of these stories need to be told, and that they can be told by that black people and star black people and still be profitable for those corporations in the first place. Like, if that's what it takes to make this happen, then, you know, it's great to have a show like Lovecraft Country. You know, I'm very much looking forward to talking about all of that, like unpacking all of the ways in which, you know, the show deals with racism, but also just looking forward to like some great scares and like some creature horrors, and I don't know, maybe a little time traveling, maybe. And
is there any time travel?
I don't know.
Oh my gosh,
how's this becoming very much my jam?
I'm not very much deep into the book, and
you know me, I love time travel.
It just says stretches across time, touching diverse. So I don't know, maybe I read more into that than there should have been. Maybe there is no time travel.
Should we be on weekly time travel watch?
I mean,
I'm always on time travel.
I mean, I was going to say,
I keep hoping.
We've been conditioned recently in pop culture to like be on time travel watch. Yeah. Like, even the most quote unquote grounded in reality shows, you can find a Reddit thread that's like, well, wait a minute, there was an inconsistency. What if this is a new timeline? Time
yeah. The multiverse. We live in the multiverse. One of the things about the show is, it's my understanding that it's not like an anthology show. So this is, it's telling, you know, it's telling the story of like a specific group of characters. Mm-hmm. But there is like maybe something that's, I think anthological is not the right word, but it's like every episode is playing with a different horror genre trope, where there will be like, I think we'll get like the haunted house episode. Ooh. I think we'll get like something that is like the cult episode. I think we'll get something akin to the vampire episode as examples. So cool. That might be really, really fun, Kevin.
I'm so excited about that. Like, I didn't know that. Cause like, so just point of reference for me, when I am excited about something or I'm in on something, especially TV or movies, I try to like just avoid everything as much as possible. Like there have been many times where for movies I've seen a trailer and then I'm just like, I'm out, and I work in entertainment. So that's really hard to do. But like, I try to avoid finding out too much because I love experiencing it for the first time. But that stuff does get me really excited. And it's actually, you know, a great segue into talking about the non, you know, racist parts of it. We can get back around to that because I'm always down to talk about it because I feel like there's always more to say when it comes to stuff like that, especially, again, like you said, the importance of just telling more of these stories, but having people of color tell these stories specifically, because Lord knows this past week I had two instances of people of color stories told by what felt like very white people and having them be really upsetting to watch. But horror.
You said
offline something.
One of them was Stargirl. What was the other one?
Did Umbrella Academy.
Oh, yeah.
Which is a show I know Strigoi. People love, but boy, Strigoi. Oh boy. Strigoi. Strigoi. So I don't want to delve too deep into that stuff.
I know
but
what you're talking
moments.
About, though.
Yeah, yeah. Just,
wasn't
anyway.
That like a show at some point, Josh? You're like, there's no way I'm going to watch the season, the second season
and
of this.
All TV can come to a screeching halt because of a global pandemic. And even if there are just a few new shows that are coming out, I still won't do anything surrounding the Umbrella Academy. And if you like it, then good for you.
I'm
happy
good
for you.
You if
I'm
you
happy
like
for
it.
You if you like it.
I masochistically, I didn't like this first season that much, and I masochistically watched the second one, and boy oh boy. Again, it just makes me more excited to be able to watch something like Lovecraft Country. But because, you know, it's just, I don't know. There's the ways, like, you see these stories, and it's very white POV, and the solutions are very white, and they just never take into account, you know, the actual people of color and that perspective and the suffering they entail, and still do. So getting these types of stories told by people of color, I think is I hate that it's groundbreaking, but it's something that needs to be done a lot more, not just in TV and movies, comics. I think in a lot of places. But the
reality TV,
aspect,
I mean, there's been a huge conversation around Survivor.
I mean, that's why Cook Islands is one of my favorites. I've talked about that so many times before, but, you know, the Survivor aspect, Cook Islands is, for the longest time, was my favorite season, and it's still up there because it was a moment that forced CBS to have to adhere to hiring and casting more people of color, because if you're going to do a season that's all about different races, you have to then put those races on TV. So I love Cook Island because of that specifically, too. It forced them to do this.
And then they were like, all right, that's enough of that.
Right. We're out. I guess we're done.
We did it, right?
I could. Josh has heard me talk about that season before too, but I love it because that season, Latonya, as someone who has not watched it, is kind of incredible because at a certain point, it just became four minorities versus a ton of white people, and the four minorities were just like, we have to take them down, and they did, and like they banded together and just wiped out all the white people, and I was just like, "This is the best season of Survivor." Okay.
So I mean, all of the episodes I now know are available for me to watch.
Yes,
they're out there.
So
definitely, Cook Islands available, I believe, on Hulu, on CBS All Access, on whatever we need to plug to get CBS.
We're not getting any money from that, Kevin.
No,
you're
not getting any money.
Yeah. Not after the things we've done. I did, you know, Josh, you hit it, and I do want to get to it because horror, as we mentioned, is a thing that like you're somewhat new to, but Latonya and I are very into, and I love the horror genre. And it's funny, Latonya, you mentioned like being introduced way too young, because I had the same experience where I was like, I want to say 4 or 5. When my dad started introducing me to horror, he would go to the local video store not too far from where we lived in the Bronx, and he would come home and he would have a horror movie and we'd watch it. And I feel like at that age, I watched, I was watching Nightmare on Elm Street. I think the first, bizarrely first Nightmare I saw was actually Five, Dream Child. But like, we're talking like Freddy and Jason, Halloween, all those movies, I was watching this very young age, and I got hooked so hard into horror, like especially that genre, the slasher kind of New Line Cinema, Paramount style, and became obsessed with it. And I have delved so deep into horror, and I like bad horror. I like good horror. I like, you know, existential horror, the a transformative kind, like Get Out and Us and Sort of Bother You. But like, it's just a genre I'm so super into. And it's so weird because like even removed from all the race stuff, I'm just pumped for any type of good horror.
Yeah.
I'm so pumped about that. I don't know your guys' full experiences or what in horror you like, but that's another thing I could talk about for days. It's just horror movies and horror.
You know, so I grew up on a steady diet of like action movies and stuff. Like I saw when I give like the origin story of how I got into the entertainment industry, it often begins with my parents very foolishly allowed me to see Terminator 2 in theaters when I was like a 7 year old. And that changed the game, and like it quickly went to Aliens and all of these like big action movies, and that was really inspirational for me from a young age. And I definitely enjoy horror, and like I've seen a decent amount of horror, but I'm far from a horror geek. And what's more is horror really scares the shit out of me, and I get really, really, really vividly uncomfortable. And I am one of those people who I'll like watch between my fingers. Like I will look away. I wear glasses. This is a podcast. It's not a visual medium. I wear glasses. I'm the nerdy white guy on the podcast, in case no one knew. I wear glasses. I take my glasses off when like I know something horrible is about to happen on screen, because I can see the general shape of what's happening, but I can't see the specifics of anything. Kevin, remember the time when we saw a horror
Final
movie
Destination,
together?
Right?
Do you want to
Final
tell the
Destination.
Story?
Yeah, I love that moment.
You're gonna love this.
It was, I believe it was the fifth Final Destination, but there was a scene, Josh,
that's
and
the one
I
that
went...
also involves a modicum of time travel.
Yes, I actually love that. It's
right.
Funny because I halfway into the movie, I didn't call the ending, but in my head, I was like, you know, it'd be a cool if they ever did.
And no, spoilers. Except but, for this, we'll spoil this death scene.
Yeah, so there's a death scene, and it involves someone going to get LASIK done, basically, or an eye exam specifically. And Josh, when
I have a huge eye phobia, in addition to being basically
that.
Blind.
Did not know that. So Josh is next to me, and he just takes off his glasses, covers his eyes, and is just like, you need to tell me when this is done. I cannot watch this. I'm like, wait, for real? And he's just like, I can't do it. You just tell me when it's over. Tell me when it's over. So the scene happens, and at the end of the scene, the person's eye basically comes out, and the thing is, it goes out a window, it rolls to a stop, and I turned to Josh, and I was just like, oh, it's done, because I thought it was over. And so he opens his eyes, puts his glasses, and immediately, like, a truck runs
run over
by a car, and Josh is like, no!
Never done.
Go! Like,
it's never done. Once the eye is out, it's never done, unless it's
true.
It's been squished. So those are the rules. Yep. I didn't make them.
The experience for me in the weeks ahead is going to be informed in no small part by the fact that like I'm going to be very, very scared every Sunday night.
I was going to say, how are you going to deal?
I don't know.
Sorry,
I'm going to let you guys do all the talking.
I'm
going to say five things, and you two can do the podcast. I'll just be here to make sure the trains are running.
All right.
Because I'm going to watch like 40% of it if it's really scary. Like, I am honestly like, I'm going to listen to the show more than I watch it, because I really get so scared with horror. But that's exciting for me, because I do think that there can be like, there's something so visceral about the genre. And I think that there, when horror is done, I do like bad horror. Like I like hokey horror can be really, really fun. But I think one of the things that I do love about the genre is, not just the way that it's often commenting on something much bigger than, what the story is presenting. And I think in this case, that's going to be very, very clearly in conversation with the story that it's telling. But I think that there are, it's very inventive in its presentation. Like, I think, like in terms of camera work, in terms of sound design, creature effects are always mesmerizing to me when done really well. And actually when done poorly too, I'm always interested in that. So I will find value here, but I will be, just like stopping short of wearing diapers on Sunday nights.
I mean, we admire your strength.
We
are here for you.
All right. Well, Josh is a coward. Yeah. Latonya,
I've said for years, I'm so craven. This is something I've said on many a podcast.
Oh, Samwell. Latonya, what horror, I guess, have you, latched onto? Like all types? I mean, where's your origin story on this?
My horror origin story began when I was super young, like I said. I have these vivid memories of my aunt getting me up in the morning on a Saturday to take me downtown. We get on the L, we go downtown, and we would go. Remember movie theaters, everybody?
I recall them very vaguely.
Going to the movies, been the before time.
Yeah.
We would see a double feature of some horror thing. And, during like a very amazing time for horror, like the 80s, the original Nightmare on Elm Street came out in 84. I was like 3. I don't know if I saw that one in the theater, but I definitely saw it on VHS at home. When we got it from the video store. My aunt definitely like primed me with the classics. It helped for her because, I was raised by a house of women. It was my grandma, my mom, my aunt. My mom was a nurse and she was also in the army. So she was like not at home as often as she wanted to be. So granny and my aunt did like granny did the more mom things. And my aunt was just like, I wanted you to be a boy. So I'm going to, make you watch football and show you horror movies. And I was like, cool. Those are things I can do. She got me into classics like all of the Freddy Jason of it all, but also into really cool movies like Blackula. I saw when I was very young, and I just thought it was like the coolest thing in the world that because I loved vampires.
Same,
and that there is like
same.
A black Dracula, just kind of like taking control of everything was really cool. The original Candyman also was something that she introduced me to, which I have to admit, there's like 2 horror movies that I've seen in my life that have scared me so much that I have not watched them again. And one of them was The Howling, like the original Howling movie that I saw when I was like 7. And the other was Candyman, because
it's a scary ass movie.
It not only is it a scary, scary movie, but I grew up in the Chicago housing project. So I had family that lived in Cabrini Green and we visited there all of the time. So I was really young when that movie happened. And there was nothing that could convince me that I wasn't going to just end up running into Candyman while visiting my relatives. Yeah. So I, the plan is though, to like rewatch that one now that I'm an adult and, that, very much looking forward to the Nia DaCosta, Jordan Peele remake of Candyman. I had such a difficult time with the questions that you asked before this, Josh, when you were asking kind of like horror credentials. Like favorite horror movie, for example, favorite killer, best kind of monster, that those types of things are so hard for me to pin down because I love so much horror.
Yeah.
Probably I'd say A Nightmare on Elm Street, Dream Warrior, even though it's like a ridiculous movie. I remember I definitely saw it in the theater and I think I was 8 at the time, so I felt I could identify with the teenagers a lot more. That was a near and dear to my heart because of getting to see it in the theater.
What's the story of Dream Warrior?
That's the one where I think everyone is in the mental health facility
And DreamWorks.
Yeah. You can't, like, obviously not fall asleep. It's, you know, when they're giving you medication.
Oh, and, yeah, you're screwed.
Yeah.
Freddy's coming for you.
He's coming for you. I think it's, like, one of the past people that he'd been after in another movie is now in a mental health facility. And so, basically, Freddy just starts ticking people off, but one by one in, like, super inventive ways, though.
Mm-hmm. So, as mentioned, like, I'm obsessed with these, and Freddy was, like, one of my first. I have seen the first, or not the first, all the Nightmare movies and Friday movies way too many times to even count that I have the storylines memorized. So, like, I can tell you, like, so Dream Warriors is the third installment. We usually skip over the second for various reasons, but it is my favorite of the Freddy movies. I think it's the best one next to the original and New Nightmare. But the
what
premise
about Freddy
of that
versus
is,
Jason?
Oh, I love that movie for so many different reasons.
Yeah.
That movie is great and super dumb.
Yeah. It is both terrible and amazing.
Yeah. Dream Warriors is very much the main plot is that, like, it's the last of the Elm Street kids is the setup. And the original hero from the first one, Nancy, does show up as, like, a older person to help them, like a mental health professional to help the kids because she's familiar with what's happening to them. But LaTanya is absolutely correct. That one changed the game because in the original Nightmare, he would kill you in visually interesting ways. Like, you know, but in the technical film work way, right? Dragging someone up a wall, pulled into the bed. But in that one, it's like he went after specifics about you.
Yeah.
And that's where that started and really did interesting stuff. The most famous one is that at the very beginning, he uses someone's ligaments to walk them like a puppet as like a puppet master. And it's really awesome and visually stunning. It's like the first kill in the movie, and it's amazing. But
it's
yeah,
got the famous "Welcome to Primetime, bitch" line with like,
yes,
and he like, because I mean, it's so cool this one because he not only does it like kills you based on things he knows about you, but he does it based on like your deepest dreams and aspirations. So, like, anything that you would, like, have a pleasant dream about accomplishing, he takes that and he turns it against you and uses it to kill you. So, one of the characters wants to be an actress, and she falls asleep, and he grabs her. He, like, somehow, like, comes through the TV. They have, like, this practical effect where they're able to, like, push, I think, like, a mannequin, like a, what is it called? A model of...
Yeah, like a mannequin head, yeah.
Yeah, through... some plastic that makes it look like he's coming through the screen, and then he like pulls this woman up and like pushes her head into the TV and says, "Welcome to primetime, bitch." And it's so campy. That movie is campy, but it's just, I don't know, I really like it. But another, like, other things I like as well. So that's like my sentimental favorite. I think Get Out, though, of anything recent has to be. It's kind of like the gold standard for an empathetic movie experience in every possible way. And there are so many layers to it. We've already talked about how, like, Jordan Peele was able to get everybody to understand, even for like 5 minutes, what it feels like to be a Black person constantly. But just like the cast was so great. I can't imagine anyone playing any of those roles at all, other than the people that played them. And then Silence of the Lambs for me. I don't know
That's
if people consider that more
movie.
Horror or like a
thriller, psychological
maybe?
Thriller. But I think it's a serial killer movie.
Yeah, yeah. I put it on there because in trying to answer that question, I was looking through a list of horror movies, and I'm like, okay, I've seen way too many horror movies, first of all. And also, I can't really narrow down any of these things. But more recently, like during the Quar, for example, I've been watching a lot more like psychological, thriller-y horror stuff. So I watched this movie called Swallow. I'm not sure if you all have heard of it. It's basically about this woman who has pica. So she like determines she
gets married. She's like moved in with her husband, who's like super rich from like a really, really rich family. And basically she just kind of like plays on her phone all the time and stays in the house. She finds out she's pregnant. And she has pica, and so she just starts to eat random objects that she finds, and collects them afterwards. And so it's kind of a body horror thing, but it's also a psychological thriller. So I got really into that. I've watched, Midsommar a lot recently.
That was hard to watch. Yeah.
I love Midsommar. It's really good.
The jumping and the hammer.
Mm-hmm.
Just don't ever break up with Ari Aster.
Oh my God.
That movie Midsommar was another good example too of a horror done in a way that's about something else, right? Like some of the horror that I think really pops, like Get Out is the perfect example for that. But like It Follows being more about STDs, you know, it's like it's using it as a metaphor. Babadook is probably one of the best horror in a long time, and it's about, you know, depression, which I think is really strong. And Midsommar is definitely like has these feminist themes and is about like grief. And I think movies like that do such a good job of taking these real emotions and like presenting them in this horror light is just so, so fantastic. And definitely the ones that I feel like you're saying, like stick out, especially now, like as this new age of horror.
I would also recommend for people who are really into horror. I actually just started my like Shutter free preview thing, which I'm using this as a justification to get it. So, there's a documentary on there called Horror Noir, A History of Black Horror. And it's on Shutter, and it really traces kind of the untold story of Black Americans through their connection to horror films. And there are interviews in there with like Jordan Peele, for example. And I think it would be like a really cool kind of like side project to watch in anticipation of this show, just because
it's you a know, series or a movie.
It's a movie. Yeah, it's just a documentary.
Yeah.
It's one of those things where you really get a great idea of like what it is that Black people think about when we think about horror. And the genre and like how we've gone from being the first people killed off in a horror movie. You know, like anytime you saw a Black person in one of those movies that we just mentioned, with the exception of Get Out, you knew that they were going to be the first one out of the movie, or like have some really weird and drawn out like death scene that happened. Kind of like reclaiming horror, dealing with like generational trauma through horror. I think that's something that we'll definitely be talking about in reviewing this show. So it would be helpful to see what some of the influences on the people who are involved in this show are.
Absolutely.
Kevin, we've been talking about doing a horror movie podcast for a long time.
I know you're jumping ahead of ourselves here, basically, Josh.
It's happened. Like, I mean, I think that that's like, you know, you both have such a wealth of information about horror movies that I think like anybody who's like interested in exploring the genre or anyone who's really well versed in the genre, I think should be looking forward to this podcast, if only to get some nerdy takes and maybe some very terrified takes from me. Is there a horror movie I should watch in it, like for next time? Should you like school me in like, should I watch Dream Warrior before our next podcast? And I'll do like my Dream Warrior book report. Like I'll watch maybe. It like 2 a.m. and then let's see if I can go to sleep.
Well, I don't know.
I love that test.
I watch the movie. I don't know about the strategy behind when you're going to do it.
So watch it broad daylight is probably.
Yeah. I mean, but that, like I said, it's a campy movie. And like we, you know, and it's old. So that might be a good one to watch just because it does have like a lot of the cool, like inventive horror things when people are just starting to figure out special effects around horror. But it's not going to like terrify you, I don't think, to the point where you can't go on. because it's because of how funny. I mean, like, the other part about why I like Freddy Krueger so much is because he is obviously despicable and like a demonic killer from beyond the grave, but he is funny.
Yep.
Like, he is hilarious. so, you know, you will laugh and hopefully not cry from the fright.
I think it's kind of wild that no one has thought to give Freddy Krueger a podcast yet. I'm not joking. I'm like that.
What is Robert Englund up to?
I feel like that's something that should happen.
Well, he had that old. There was like an old Freddy's Nightmares TV series, which is not a podcast, but every beginning he was like a Crypt Keeper type person where he would just be talking to the camera fourth wally. So it's sort of similar ish. That could be really funny. I mean, I'm with LaTanya all the way. Like, Freddy was, you know, when people ask me, like, Freddy, Jason, Michael, and all the rest, like, who do you like? Freddy's probably my favorite of those slashery killers. I think because he is funny. Like, if I was going to be killed by someone, it might be him, because at least I'm, like, dying laughing, you know, versus, like, wow. Jason, who's just going to cut me in half or find a
nearest. Jason should not anything. Have a podcast, I think.
No. Jason should not. Him and Michael would just sit there and dead silence.
Michael Myers, what would they do? They don't talk.
Know. No. Yeah, exactly. And then, like, I think personally, the worst one would probably be Pinhead and the Cenobites, just because, like, they will torture you for all eternity.
I've never seen a Hellraiser.
Hellraiser is.
I've never done a Hellraiser.
First one seems so horrifying. Yeah.
It's intense.
Yeah.
Well, Hellraiser is fascinating because, like LaTanya said, that one is more, I think, as terrifying as they are. The people that are involved are like, they show up because the people themselves can be also horrible people.
Yeah.
Pinhead and the Cenobites are actually not that in, like, that. They don't have that much screen time in the first Hellraiser for sure, and not as much in the second one, which I think are the two that are the most worth it. But, like, it is interesting because there are themes that you see reflected in that type of stuff. Again, like, you know, I'm trying to think of, like, the most interesting older movie that has, like, racial themes, but if the closest one, and it's so subtle in its way, is, like, Alien, which definitely has more, has a lot of themes about, like, you know, rape and stuff like that, but that is also weirdly about, like, colonization, which I think is fascinating. I would love, you know, I actually am fiddling around with a story idea that plays with the idea of, like, aliens and the idea of colonization and how that horrifies white people. I don't know, Josh. It's hard to be like, what should you watch before our next? Because, like, I will just sit here all day and be like, you should watch Trick or Treat. You should watch This Nightmare this Friday. Watch the new Halloween. Like, there's just so much that I could just be throwing at you for this.
The original Night of the Living Dead. I'm just trying to double check.
I've done the Romeros. Dawn of the Dead is one of my favorite movies. I love Dawn of the Dead.
The remake was Zack Snyder, you mean?
Of course, is what I'm talking about. I'll just leave it there.
Yeah.
And let the listener draw their conclusion. Is he joking? Right. Does he mean it?
Yeah. On our first podcast, LaTanya Starks decided that she was going to talk smack about very powerful people in Hollywood. It was also her last podcast.
Yeah, the release to cut, people are coming after us now.
Oh, no.
Release to Joshua cut.
No, please, never. Oh, no. Nightmare. Dream Warrior. I'm going to watch Dream Warrior before we get on the... I'm just going to make the call, because that... I needed... Welcome to prime time, he says?
Welcome to prime time,
what a
bitch.
Jokester, it's... that Freddy Krueger. Yeah. So what kind of horror do you want to see in Lovecraft? What do you want to see Lovecraft play with, LaTanya?
Well, to me, the scariest horror villains are people.
Yep.
So... I would, you know, really like to see Lovecraft Country play into kind of that existential horror that we discussed a little bit earlier. I mean, it's just, I mean, the basis of the the like call to adventure that occurs with the main character played by Jonathan Majors is that he finds out that his dad, played by Michael K. Williams, is missing, right? And so he gets together with a childhood friend and his uncle who actually is responsible for creating essentially a green book. So like the original green book, for those of you all who may not know, or you know, who actually watched that movie Green Book and thought that you learned from there, you did not. So
yes.
Yeah, let's just start there. So the known as the Negro Motorist Green Book, it was first published in 1936, which was the year my granny was born, by a Harlem-based postal carrier called Victor Hugo Green, because, you know, many black people were starting to get cars for the first time in America. And Green noticed the risk that accompanied black people wherever we went outside of black neighborhoods. So the guide coincided with like the number of people who were becoming car owners and wanted to be able to travel without fear. And so the first edition of the Green Book covered like hotels, restaurants, and then, you know, sundown towns, which for those of you who don't know about those, were towns that had laws that essentially only allowed black people out and visible before sundown. After sundown, black people were considered fair game to be killed. We currently, call sundown towns every, city in America. But anyway. So yeah, the first generation of the Green Book was to like give some protection or like an added sense of ease, for like black motorists, that were traveling, just trying to like travel across the country. And you know, the fact that that wasn't the only travel guide, that there are new like modern day Green Books that are being published, given all of the like, the racial unrest that's occurring because, you know, of the way that our country is divided. I'm just really interested in seeing, you know, how the show deals with with themes around, you know, race in the 50s, and how it's not very much different than things that happen today. It's just that there are more laws that are codified, to attempt to try to like, I don't know, make racism more covert and covert in many ways. So I'm looking forward to that. I'm looking forward to just how the show is going to play with the monsters that it has in terms of like, are they representative of any of the people in the show? I know like Tony Goldwyn is one of the villains. He's like,
yeah, he sold out Patrick Swayze in Ghost. That asshole. I'll never forgive him
and
for that.
Then he was Fitz on Scandal, and you don't treat Olivia Pope that way. But anyway.
Not at all. it's handled.
Yeah. So yeah, he's I guess the big human bad. So I'm looking forward to whatever this, what is it called? So they're traveling to New England and they are showing up, to meet with Samuel Braithwaite, who's the, played by Tony Goldwyn, and the heir of the estate that once owned one of Atticus's, who's the main character played by Jonathan Majors' ancestors. And it seems like they're a part of something called the Order of the Ancient Dawn, which I don't know. It's on a former plantation. It's called the Order. Sounds terrible to me. So I want to see how they're going to deal with the horror of that. Cults are super interesting to me. And I think of like anti-black, just racist organizations as cults. They're just more dangerous.
Or an entire political party.
Yeah. Or that. And also very interested in how generational trauma is going to come to the fore of all of this. I mean, like returning to going from a place like Chicago, which is where Atticus is in the book, in 1954. And he's also an army vet. So like a young black army vet driving across the country, trying to find his missing father in a cult, who's been like kidnapped kind of by a cult. Sounds amazing. And I want to know how generational trauma is going to play into all of that. And finally, I'm really looking forward to, some uncanny surrealism. One of the best instances to point to from one of the commercials for the show is when they have that like black boy or the black person who's on the sign that's on the side of the building and their eyes move, which is just like really cool and creepy, but also gets into some very like current discussions that, you know, have been had with different corporations about the use of like black images to promote their cooking product or whatever, without giving any thought to like what that might mean to black people or the black people that are the images themselves. So yeah. And then I'm just also looking forward to like a really visually stunning show with some cool music. I was hooked now. I was listening to it before I got on the call with you all. That song by, I want to say it's like a Muscle Shoals song. It's called The Pines, and okay. It's a riff off of like the Lead Belly, and The Pines song. And they've got like a lot of the soundtrack up on Spotify already, and it's pretty great. So looking forward to all of that.
You were mentioning before that's a hallmark of Misha Green's. Was that a constant on Underground as well, the show that she did before this one?
Yeah, so a little bit. I mean, this is the best example I can think of right now, but a little bit Strigoi going into it because of the Kanye of it all.
Yeah,
let's not get into it.
Let's not. We can agree to do that.
So yeah, the show, like the first episode of that show, opens with a slave running away to in the woods to black skinhead, which just like it, you hear kind of like the heartbeat of the music at first, and then you start to realize that it's the song, and you're like, okay, this is a story about like the Macon Seven, which is this kind of made up group of runaways, and what they were termed by the slave catchers. And I was not expecting black skinhead to pop up in like the first 3 seconds of the show. And that, I mean, it just went on from there. It's just kind of like the, like audacity of the needle drops that Misha Green's shows use. I'm looking forward to it. And HBO typically has some really good needle drops too, but yeah, during like moments of, kind of real intensity, real fear, there will be some type of like hip hop accompanies. This happened in Underground a lot. That is unexpected and new. So I'm looking forward to like whatever artists we're going to be given in terms of playlists. HBO has a great track record of like getting amazing talent to do the music for their shows. Obviously, Ramin Djawadi and then like Trent Reznor for Watchmen. So this is going to be exciting as well, I think.
Kevin, as we're wrapping up, you got any forward looking things, some final thoughts as we're about to hit the road? We're just on the eve of this show premiering. We're in the final days before we have no idea, you know, what this thing's all about.
I mean, I'm excited to find out, especially right, like everything LaTanya said, but also just the discovery aspect of diving in and just really excited to analyze a lot of this stuff and kind of pick it apart. I mean, that's some of the interesting parts too of watching something like Us or Get Out or Sorry to Bother You, was really also delving into the themes and like kind of like pulling apart the stuff that that really hit home the stuff that they were trying to say. I think it's going to be really cool to delve into that. But also, yeah, like the horror parts, like how are they dealing with certain issues? The idea of like a different type of horror movie each time or each episode is really interesting. Like what's the take on the haunted house? What is the take on, the Cthulhu stuff? There's so much there, I think, that has potential to be played with. I'm just hyper cognizant too of like excited about what they have to say and what they're going to be saying about the race stuff. And especially, you know, the modern context of it, I guess. LaTanya said this earlier, and it's so true, the idea of timely for people. And I think it's the same thing where, like, just in the little stuff, the POV of white people are always so prevalent. And it's just like in movies like Green Book and movies like The Help, where it has to be from the white perspective. But even in things like Timely, like, oh man, this stuff is so timely. And it's just like, nah, this stuff is like forever. It's just that you're now paying attention to it. It's like when people were telling me with the stuff to be like, oh, you know, there's stuff happening, but remember, it's a marathon, not a sprint. And that's like, bro, you know how long I've been running? Like, it's like we were running since birth. Like, this isn't like something that's just like new to us. We're just like, oh, it's time to join in on this. It's like, nah, we've been doing this for a while. We are aware. And so it's those little things like that make me really pumped about it. And, you know, not to say again, like every white version of it has been super wrong, but it's just refreshing is the best way to put it to get these types of stories. And I just hope it's successful and just gets more of them. I mean, there should be more regardless, but I know how Hollywood works. Like, there should just, you give more people of color and black people the chance to tell stories, you will have by virtue more successful stories, as opposed to waiting for one and then being like, well, I guess people want it. Let's just go with that. You can't put the weight of the world on one creator and one show. Unfortunately, that's what happens a lot when it comes to these types of stories. I'm just really pumped about it. I don't want to get my hopes too high, because like that's also a terrible thing to do. I'm pumped about this. I'm pumped about talking more about Jordan Peele as well. Always listen in if he can hear us now. Like, listen to us every week.
Jordan,
he won't do that. He's too busy.
He's got a lot going on, I think.
That's so cool that you got retweeted by Jordan Peele, though.
I got liked.
I wish I got liked. You're not that. You're a little less cool now. A little less.
Yeah, if I get Keegan to do something at some point, my goal's done. I got a like by Keegan.
You got them both. I'm really stoked for the show. I'm really stoked for the podcast. These are conversations that Kevin and I like will have before or after we're recording, and it's been such a delight to have you as a weekly part of my life, Kevin, as somebody who's been my friend for 10 plus years at this point. So now to have you as a twice weekly part of my life, where like there is like a guaranteed swath of 90 minutes a week, two times over now that I'm going to be talking to you, is incredible. And Latanya, this is your first podcast? Are you serious?
Yeah.
Because
you did great.
It's thanks. Like you've been doing it all along. So it's, I'm really, really pumped to honestly like get to know you better. I'm really excited to learn at the knee of both of you in terms of the Freddy Krueger of it all, because that's the only thing that I have to learn on this podcast.
Yes, nothing else. Yeah. You've got everything. Woke, so you're set.
So I'm set, right? Like, it's done. I'm really excited for the podcast. I think, Kevin, to your point of like, you don't want to get your expectations up too high. I think like, look, even if the show is just like really good, or like it's just good or whatever, like it's opening the door for, I think, a lot of like side conversations that we can be embarking on. I think as even just like an avenue to be talking about race and racial injustice and horror as just like a vessel for that. I think that we're gonna have a valuable time here on the podcast, and I'm really excited to have this as a part of my life for the next 10 weeks. That's it. This is the maiden voyage. This is the preview show. Just a little get to know ya. And I think we've gotten a lot of good stuff. And we're, as of this recording, we're days away from Lovecraft coming out.
So close.
So close. So here's the deal. We're going to be podcasting each and every week about Lovecraft Country. We're going to be recording the podcast on Tuesday nights. The show comes out
on Sunday. It airs on Sundays, gives us enough time to get feedback from you, dear listener. We get to watch it a couple of times, so we really know what we're talking about here. And the podcast will be dropping on Thursday, so you'll have a few days in between the podcast and the next new episode of the show. So to get your feedback in, lovecraft@postshowrecaps.com. That is by far and away the best way to do it. It'll come to LaTanya, Kevin, and myself, that feedback. So please send it in, lovecraft@postshowrecaps.com. We're also on the Twitter bots, Matt Round Howard. Kevin, Kev Mahadeo. LaTanya, you remember yours?
I am at LK Starks.
Okay. So we're there at Postshow Recaps as well, if I didn't say that. Anything else, Kevin, LaTanya?
Something actually you did just say that I do want to also say, like, you know, honestly, the show could also not talk about race at all and just be a good horror show. And I'm fine with that because I realize like there's so much pressure from what we just said to be like, you better talk about race and address it in a way that's going to be like important and have something to say. And that's also putting so much pressure on creators, like, which is weird in and of itself. So whatevs, as long as the show is good and entertaining, I'm going to be happy.
We'll be happy.
Yeah. And I think we're more just acknowledging the landscape that the show exists in. You know, it is about people, Black people traveling from Chicago to New England, like across the country. It's a Black cast for the most part, Black creators. So race is going to be in the discussion. That's just how it is, unless you purposely choose to ignore it. The only thing that I would say is that, you know, we are grateful to like have another piece of art that's going to be a rich text. Let's do ourselves a favor and hopefully the people listening will do the same and not expect this to be the one show that explains, you know, and deals with all of racism for you. It's just important that we have shows like this, as Kevin and Josh mentioned before, so that Hollywood understands that more shows like this need to be made. So it doesn't have to be perfect. Not every show made by a white creator is perfect, but they still get lots more shows. So as long as we're realizing that, you know, we can't put too much pressure on what we're going to expect, I'm just looking forward to like really watching another cool HBO show and talking to you all about it.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
I'm super excited.
All right, 100%. Everyone, we're coming back next week. Keep an eye out Thursday. I was gonna say October 20th. Like, oh man,
might as well
time travel. Thursday, August 20th, we'll be back with our first proper recap of Lovecraft Country. Until then, everybody, take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.